This is John Fisher for the Ultimate Practice Builder for New York Injury Lawyers.
Today we're very lucky to have one of the country's leading medical illustration experts, Bill Westwood of Westwood Communications, based in Albany, New York. I've worked with Bill on a number of cases, and Bill is just top-notch and one of the people I'd recommend over anyone else. He has a background in anatomy, pathology, and surgery. He has a master's degree in medical illustration from the Medical College of Georgia. He's board certified in medical illustration, and he has over 30 years of experience. Bill has been 10 years on the staff of the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and he's worked in the past 20 years in his own business, Westwood Medical Communications. He's worked with physicians, surgeons, medical manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies, and trial lawyers. In the last 12 years, Bill has dedicated his practice exclusively, or almost exclusively, to working with plaintiff attorneys in medical legal cases. So I've had the good fortune to work with Bill, and today he's going to give us some insights in how he can help you with your practice and how to take really complex medical legal cases and some non-medical cases and try to simplify them through illustrations, exhibits, and timelines. So welcome to the call, Bill. And what I'd like to do is get started, because you and I worked together recently, and I'd like to use that sort of as an illustration point, how you can help attorneys. Now, just to give the lawyers a little bit of insight, the case was a labor law 240 case where a construction worker who was a sprinkler fitter had fell from a rack platform in a refrigerated warehouse. And the issue in the case was whether or not the worker had an area on the rack platform where he could have tied off his body harness. And so he had a full body harness. The claim in the case was that he did not have an accessible tie-off point. And so I met with Bill, and I was extremely impressed by his work. But Bill, can you tell our lawyers on this call the type of work you did on this particular case?
Well, on this particular case, we needed to make some demonstrative drawings that would show your client's height, his ability to reach certain distances. In order to do this accurately and to get these exhibits entered, I decided that the thing to do would be to build a full-size replica of this warehouse storage rack. It was exactly 6 feet 10 inches high, 9 feet long, and approximately 6 feet deep. We were going to do this as a photographic set, bring your client in, put the harness on him, show how high he could reach, and how, because he was relatively short, how difficult it would be for him to tie off while balancing on 2-inch wide steel angle bars. So I built this out of, and it was built absolutely to scale, out of 2x4s and 2x2s. And then we were going to take photographs, and from those photographs, we would make exact illustrations showing the equipment he wore and also his ability to reach these tie-off points.
You know, and I was extremely impressed, because I had the intention of just having some drawings and illustrations. And one day I showed up at your office, Bill, and you had this replica done that was reaching up to the ceiling. And with that replica, what we were trying to do is actually not do just an illustration. We're trying to show exactly what the setup was, whether that be good or bad, and bring the client there so that he could actually show how difficult it would have been or not difficult to tie off his full body harness to the various pieces of steel metal where he was working at the time. So that was a really interesting work that you did on that. But let's focus a little bit more on the medical aspects of what you do, the anatomy, pathology. First of all, can you tell the lawyers on this call a little bit about your background working at the Mayo Clinic and with surgeons and pharmaceutical companies and how you got to this point in your career?
Well, I got interested in medical art in college and was fortunate to get accepted into the program at the Medical College of Georgia, which is one of only four programs for medical illustration, graduate level programs for medical illustration in the country. Upon graduation, I was even more fortunate to get an opportunity to work at the Mayo Clinic. While at Georgia, the three-year program that I was involved with encompassed what used to be the first 2 years of medical school, way back in the late 60s. Medical students didn't get to see patients until they were in their junior year. Before that, the first 2 years were their preclinical years, where they took gross anatomy, pathology, neurosurgery, embryology, physiology, etc. Our classes took the same courses that they did along with them. The only difference was when they hit the clinical years, we kept studying other things. We would be in a course like gross anatomy, for example, in the morning from 8 o'clock until noon. They would go on to some other course that afternoon, and we would go back to the art studio. The important thing here was that we learned how to do, first of all, we learned the anatomy, we learned the pathology, and then we would go back to the studio and learn how to create illustrations in such a way to communicate this complicated information. So I graduated from the medical college, and I was fortunate to get a job at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And because I was a Georgia boy, they had me come up in January to make sure I could tolerate the winters. At Mayo was a great opportunity for me. I got to work with some of the world's leading surgeons, doing some absolutely fantastic things. I was with the original team at Mayo that developed what is now the standard surgical approach to operate on tumors of the pituitary gland, which is through the nose. Prior to this, it was absolutely contraindicated by all textbooks, and you had to operate through the skull, and operating on the pituitary through the skull guarantees that the patient will come out blind in one eye, because you have to cut, in order to get to the pituitary from above, you have to cut one of the optic nerves. But anyway, this was the type of thing that I got involved with over and over at Mayo over my tenure career or time there. And Mayo really helped me set a standard for myself. And every day since then, I've tried my best to live up to their standard and do the very, very best job that I could do. I got to work with leading researchers investigating Alzheimer's disease. I got to work, as I said, with leading surgeons. I worked with one of the world's foremost ENT surgeons, who's still a personal friend today, went to surgery many times with him, actually scrubbed in on a number of cases with him. I have a tremendous amount of experience in surgical illustration, probably more than 90% of the medical illustrators practicing today, because I was in surgery so frequently. So often today, the young people come out of school, and beyond the surgical experience they've had in school, they may go to work for a company and never go back into surgery again. But
hey Bill,
Mayo was fantastic.
Bill, if I can ask you, with your background actually observing the different surgeries, how can it assist the lawyers listening to this call in terms of using you and, for example, in getting admitted into evidence different illustrations or models that you've done of different types of surgeries? How can your background help them in, first of all, creating these exhibits and then getting them admitted into evidence?
Well, I think I'll say off the bat, I think I can say that I've never had a anatomical or surgical illustration challenged by a judge or a defense counsel on the basis of accuracy. I see an awful lot of exhibits that are being done that are not surgically and anatomically accurate. I've actually been approached by several defense firms asking me to look at exhibits that they had and comment on their accuracy, and then they would ask me, would you be willing to testify to this? And so far I've not done that, but I think the time may come when defense counsel looks at some of these things that I see that are not particularly accurate and challenges them in court. What I try to do is create surgical illustrations that I know are absolutely accurate. I work with the operating report, and as long as it's a good operating report, I can recreate what happened in that surgical suite very accurately. I've actually had a number of, and this has happened more than once, a number of medical experts working for different clients of mine comment to me. They say, well, gee, were you standing behind me watching over my shoulder when I did this? How did you do this? So I'm very proud of the fact that the anatomical and surgical exhibits that I create for attorneys are good, and because of this they're going to be able to, I think, stand a better chance of getting these accepted by the judge, and oftentimes there have been certain instances where these have actually caused defense counsel, and this is what my clients have told me, caused defense counsel to make an offer to settle.
Sure. So one of the things in terms that I think is really cool is that you've got a background at the Medical College of Georgia, a master's degree. You've witnessed and observed many surgeries over the course of your career, and that gives you firsthand personal knowledge of these different operations, including the operation on the pituitary gland, so that when you testify about the different illustrations that you've created, you're not just testifying from textbook knowledge, you have some firsthand knowledge of how the operation is performed because you've seen and witnessed it, and I think that's a huge advantage, especially in terms of getting the exhibit admitted into evidence. Typically you would do that through the medical expert or the physician who did the surgery, but you know, as most of the lawyers on this call know, that's sometimes there's little glitches in that. There might be some issue with the testimony, and to have a medical illustrator who can provide the firsthand personal knowledge is a big win. Now, let's talk a little bit about timelines, because I want to make sure that the lawyers on this call are aware that you're not just limited to medical illustrations and the type of construction exhibit that you did with me. You do timelines as well. Tell us about that.
I do pretty much anything that an attorney might need. I try to work closely with my attorney clients to determine what they need in order to win their case. And then I do, for example, complex timelines. It's important when developing timelines to use design and color appropriately to make the timeline understandable. I see so many timelines that just have dozens of labels on them. They have leader lines coming up from everywhere, and at a glance, it doesn't tell you anything. You know, I try to design, and timelines are tough. You can't always do it, but I try to design timelines in such a way that I use design and color to really tell you at a glance what happened or what didn't happen in a particular situation. I also do word charts and graphs. I think, John, I'd mentioned this to you. We'll do a series of word charts sometimes where we will set up questions. What was the hospital protocol in this situation? Why was this protocol important? And then you put the third exhibit, and these are just word charts, and they have the question and the answer on the word chart, and then the final question is, did Dr. Smith follow this protocol, or did the hospital personnel follow this protocol? And the answer is no. These types of things, while an attorney can simply say that, when you present information in this way, because all of this is about communication, it doesn't matter. You have the fanciest illustration in the world, and if you can't explain it properly and can't communicate that information either visually or a combination visually and orally, you're not going to be effective. But those word charts will stick in those jurors' minds, and they're going to remember that when they go back into the jury room to deliberate. The other thing I do is custom or original anatomical models. John, I think I showed you one recently while you were around that I'd done, taking a standard model. A gentleman had been hit by a log. He was part of a logging operation, and he was hit in the head by a log, crushed his skull, and the problem was, 3 or 4 years later after the accident, by the time the case went to trial, he looked pretty normal. He had had some traumatic brain injury. He had some other slight physical deficits, but just to sit him in a chair in front of the jury, he looked pretty normal. And the illustrations just did not do justice to how severe his skull was crushed. Fortunately, in that case, we had superb x-rays. So I took a standard skull. I followed the x-rays. I cut it apart where it was fractured, and I glued it back together in the same shape and with each fragment exactly as it was in the x-ray. And we it was a really effective exhibit. I've done some other things like that, using standard brain models. I did one where we showed a partial a removal of part of the a temporal lobe of the brain. You know, the jury was able to hold that model in their hands and hold that significantly large portion of the temporal lobe in their hand and see how much of the brain of this injured person had to be removed because of an accident. I've done many of these types of things. So one that I did a few years ago, I actually reconstructed the inside of a Ford Fiesta to match photographs and descriptions of a car that had been in a severe accident and injured someone severely, but it had been, for some reason, I don't recall the exact reason, had been destroyed. So the attorney bought a Ford Fiesta, and we set about reconstructing the inside as it would have been as it was when it trapped this young lady in the car and injured her.
Well, that's great stuff. And right. And one of the things for our listeners today is complexity is the enemy. You want to make the cases as simple and as clear as possible, because the juries today, they don't have a lot of patience, they don't want to be there, and they need to be spoon-fed the information as simply as possible. And one of the things, Bill, that I've seen from you, I've worked with a lot of different companies throughout the United States, is some of the stuff is just really unique and different than anything else or any other concepts that I heard. And one thing I would recommend to our listeners is, if you have an issue, if you have a case and you want to talk to Bill, just chat with him. He'd be happy to speak with you, I'm sure, and discuss the concepts and say, this is really complicated. How do I make it easy for the jury to understand through visual communications is awesome. Let me ask you, Bill. Now, the last 12 years, you've worked, I think, almost exclusively for plaintiff trial lawyers. Why is it that you've gone now to working, you know, with just plaintiff lawyers and not anymore with pharmaceutical or medical companies for illustration purposes?
Well, it sort of evolved. The short of it was the pharmaceutical industry changed around 1995 when the Clintons first tried to change healthcare, and so that part of my business went down. I'd always maintained a certain number of attorney clients, and I had I had recently moved to Albany, New York from Rochester, Minnesota, and I just decided, well, I needed to ramp up this part of my business while the pharmaceutical market came back. And the reality was, once I began working with more and more trial attorneys, particularly locally and regionally, I just began developing, you know, very good clients who depended on me, who came back, and more and more and more, I took on much more of the medical legal work, and I began to enjoy it tremendously. I really empathize with people who've been injured. I enjoy helping. Trial attorneys are interesting people to me. The large majority of them are inquisitive and creative and receptive of suggestions and are willing to sit down and discuss what they need to, you know, what information they need to communicate clearly and simply to a jury. And I enjoy that process. So it's just evolved that way, and I have no plans to alter that.
Well, I'll tell you, some of the different testimonials and endorsements you've received from some of the Capital District trial attorneys are very impressive, and I've been extremely impressed by your work. If the lawyers listening to this call would like to speak with you, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, they can email me at westwood@capital.net, capital.net. They can call me at 518-432-5237, or they can stop by the studio at 915 Broadway in Albany.
Great. And one of the things that I really appreciate, Bill, was how accessible you were to me in just basically making yourself available and also trying to customize the exhibit that we worked on together in the construction accident case that basically would take away any argument from the defense that the exhibit misstates or distorts the reality. So it was fantastic work, and I want to thank you for having me on, for being on this call today, because it's a pleasure speaking with you, and I think that you provide an extremely valuable service to trial attorneys.
Well, thank you very much, John. I really appreciate your having me on the call, and I've enjoyed this. So,
okay. Take care, Bill.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.